Oh, Neil Oliver's here. Fantastic. The show gets better and better. Neil, very good morning to you.
Hi, Mike. Good morning.
Good to see you. How are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you. I was enjoying listening to Jeff Buys Cars. I'm aware of Jeff. I think my father-in-law told me about Jeff first.
He's great, isn't he? I mean, it's nice to know that there are still some good humans in the world, because it feels at times as though there aren't any left.
Yeah, couple of cars ago, had a Volvo 940S, which is the biggest, boxiest Volvo estate that Volvo ever made.
Yeah,
and I was sad to see it go, and I presently drive a 2006 plate Chrysler Grand Voyager.
That's brilliant. I had one of my favourite ever cars when I lived in New York. Was a friend of mine who was a lawyer, had this huge what they used to call it was an estate car, but you know, they call it a station wagon, but it actually had wood on the side, and I think it was a Chevy. And it's sort of 7 or 8 seater. And he couldn't afford, he didn't want to have it anymore. Parking in New York was a nightmare. So we were in a bar one night and he said, "Do you want the car?" And I said, "Yeah." He said, "I don't really want any money for it." And I ended up giving him $1 for it, basically. So we called it the dollar mobile. And I used to just sort of park, and it didn't matter whether you hit anybody in it. It didn't matter whether you parked it wrong or, you know, ran it up on the, it was great. I had the car for about a year. And it was the most fun I think I've ever had. And it was like driving a boat. It was huge.
Yeah, I mean, the Grand Voyager, the seats fold down into the floor. So it becomes like a van in the back. And you can get sheets of 8x4, you know.
Fantastic.
Ply in it and so on. And we've got a wolfhound and, you know, she jumps in the back, no problem. It's just this, and because it's an 06 plate, as Jeff was mentioning, it's got nothing in it like tech. Yeah. So when you get in it, as long as you don't bring your mobile phone with you, it's like being in a bubble of the past. There's no way you can get hacked or listened to.
Well, that's the other thing, isn't it? Because now we know, for example, that everything you do in a car, I mean, I've got a relatively new car now, everything's tracked. I'm sort of fairly simple at times. I was talking to a guy that knows a lot more about cars than I do. And I said, "How does it know, that I need a service?" And it's like, well, because, you know, you get the record, you get the, you know, it's because it's all the information in the car is being fed back to the dealer. So they know exactly what you're doing. They know exactly where you're going. They've got your sat nav down as a sort of download probably at all times. It's quite frightening, really.
Yeah, I don't use sat nav. I mean, obviously it's got a plate on it, and you know the cameras will be reading the plate. And you know, I'm not pretending for a moment that I'm living some kind of invisible life. But as far as you can, it's a small act of rebellion, because you know you can't access what's going on inside that old boat.
Yeah.
From the outside, it is a bubble.
Yes. No. That is something that's worth knowing. I sort of hesitate to get you onto more serious matters, but we must, I suppose, talk about them, because we've now got the delights of Andy Burnham, who's about to come and run the country for us, despite nobody actually asking him to do it. Are you as disturbed about that as I am?
Well, yes and no. I don't think he matters. I've long since awoken to the reality that, I mean, they're just sock puppets. Placemen and women who get selected, not elected, and so on and so on. So, you know, whether it was Andy Burnham or Ronald McDonald, or it's irrelevant. And that, as far as that goes, he is irrelevant. Decisions are being made and things are happening in the country, but focusing attention on these individuals is, I think, is essentially pointless. It doesn't matter who it is. You could be angry with them because they're willing to take part in the charade. You know, they're willing to stand up and play a role, which, you know, makes them contemptible in and of themselves. But I mean, obviously, the bigger project that's been choreographed by people whose names we don't know and whose faces we're not familiar with, he comes in, pushes harder, or seems to push harder on the gas pedal to continue the car. Metaphor, you know, higher taxes, more things that are choreographed and confected to annoy people. Because I think that's a huge part of, you know, there's enormous amounts of data going back decades that, you know, when it comes to manipulating people, maintaining a permanent state of anxiety is of critical importance there.
Yeah.
It's like with prisoners of war who exist in a state where they, you know, they fear imminent death, the threat of death. month after month, year after year, not knowing what's going to happen next. And a lot of what goes on at the moment, everything's just designed to make people angry, set people at other people's throats on the basis of whether they're black, white, or brown, or whether they're Muslim or Christian or Buddhist, or whether they're gay or straight. As long as people are kept on edge, then they become that bit more susceptible to being nudged in the manner of a flock.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I think it's important always to remember that if you're being annoyed, if you're enraged by the next thing, well, that's the plan.
Yeah, right. And it does seem like a lot of people are very annoyed and very enraged because I noticed it as you walk around.
I mean, terrible things are happening. It's not as though that's illusory. I mean, terrible things are happening. You know, an absolute, you know, sordid wickedness is playing out all around us. But that is being put in front of people's faces to make them angry, because it will. If you abuse children, if you murder people, you know, for no apparent reason, if you do all of these things, people get angry and anxious. And those things are happening.
Yeah, they really are. And I mean, I was really annoyed yesterday, actually, by the scenes in the House of Commons, you know, where Keir Starmer was kind of departing like some kind of champion of the boxing ring, you know, as if he'd done something great, as if somebody would miss him, as if people would be like, you know, and I know you're going to say, well, he's just another one of the sock puppets, and yes, he is, but you could see them all part of the same game. They were all, you know, patting each other on the back, and they were, you know, putting aside all their differences and pretending that they all liked each other. It's all very weird.
It's all very, well, it's a soap opera. It's if you invest it with any kind of reality, you know, the little magazines, the sort of pulp magazines that are by the checkout in supermarkets, that have the faces of characters from soap operas on them, and they have headlines on them, and they invite people to think that there's something real in a soap opera, which of course there isn't. And that's the level that we're at. It's notorious, you know, if you're still willing to pick a side, then you're prey. There's endless footage of, you know, when the cameras go off or when the debate's over, you know, they wander about glad handing one another, you know, laughing together, because they are characters they are actors playing the parts of characters in a sitcom. And it doesn't really matter to them. I mean, the first order of business at the start of every parliamentary session is topping up the pensions, you know, the copper-bottomed, gold-plated pensions that they all share. You know, if you think that a Keir Starmer is actually at daggers drawn with a Kemi Badenoch or a Nigel Farage, then, well, you know, welcome to the show. I mean, you know, that's showbiz. And if you want to be distracted by it and, you know, and have your emotions manipulated by it, well, okay, but it doesn't actually have a real bearing on your life.
Yeah. So what's the antidote to it then? How do you stay sane?
You turn away from it, I think. I mean, I think as long as too many people have faith in the existing systems, you know, if you think you can vote your way out of it, to take but one example, then you're trapped. It's pretty much, you know, the little plastic steering wheels, you know, to continue the car analogy metaphor that people used to fit on the dashboard of their cars so that their 3-year-old could twiddle his wheel and pump the horn. But of course, the wheel's not connected. The little steering wheel's not connected to anything, it just distracts the kid. Right. That's Parliament. Mm. Parliament is the little plastic steering wheel for the toddlers of the population who get all excited about turning the wheel, but it's not changing the direction of the car.
Yeah. So how do you know where you're going then?
Well, it is a massive shift. I mean,
you have to get out of the car.
Well, it's a massive shift in perception, I suppose, really. Mm. I mean, I freely admit that I was duped for 50-odd years. Mm. You know, mostly because I wasn't paying attention. I was too busy with, you know, trying to get work and
life,
you know, paying the bills and all the rest of it. But you've got to turn away from it, and you've got to accept that, yeah, it's very inconvenient because the system purports to offer convenient life, which it does. You know, you can have things done for you. And as long as you play your part in that, you know, you're within the system, you're trapped in the car. And the solution, the beginning of the solution is just to realize that you're inside a car that you're not driving, and the pedals and wheels that you're invited to think have any bearing on the direction are just plastic.
Yeah. But, I mean, that would drive a lot of people insane, wouldn't it? That would make people worry that they actually have no control over anything.
Well, when you wake, I mean, wakening, it's a massive thing. There's no quick fix. But we've been, this illusory situation in which we find ourselves, it's the stuff of not just of decades, but of centuries. Mm. And any single generation that embarks upon trying to get out of it, you know, it's a Herculean effort. But it just begins with realization. And there's an enormous act of humility in it. You've got to, the famous line, Mark Twain or whoever, he said, it's much easier to fool a man than to persuade him he's been fooled.
Yeah.
It's humiliating and embarrassing to admit that you've been gulled by a fiction. But once enough people realize it, then, you know, effectively the lights in the theater, to mix the metaphor, come on, and you realize that you're just looking at actors on a stage, and that that they're wearing pan stick makeup, and that you can see the strings and the trap doors and the badly painted set, and then you think, right, and you look around at one another and you think, right, we are the audience. There must be somewhere better to be than this, and then you look for the brightly illuminated exits and you walk out the door, you know, a la the Truman Show or whatever, but. It's a very difficult concept, but we have been willingly just going along with a fiction. But you can see it falling down around us. I mean, that's why there's this growing hysteria on the part of you can see it on the faces of the actors. That's why there's this desperate bid to, you know, censor the internet, to, you know, to have people take on digital IDs and to submit to the surveillance cameras that you were talking about, because there is no narrative for the baddies in the pantomime, because no one's paying attention, taking their lines seriously anymore. You know, all they can do is try and shut us down, stop us talking, stop us sharing the idea. That's why it's becoming increasingly frantic. That's why, you know, there's a change of actor in the lead role. You know, get him out, get another one in. Is just all they've got. But increasingly, I mean, it took Keir Starmer a couple of years to become the most unpopular British Prime Minister probably of all time. Andy Burnham is going to walk into 10 Downing Street already as the most unpopular Prime Minister in British history. Everything's moving faster and faster, and it will become more and more chaotic, because the sowing of chaos, however bizarre and apparently incomprehensible it looks, is because sowing chaos and keeping as many people as possible on edge is all they've got.
Yeah, and they're struggling more and more, aren't they, to keep a lid on it all, I think, particularly with the way that the internet is going,
completely.
The way that YouTube is going.
You know, look at to go to the hackneyed examples, although there were people right away after JFK Dallas 1963 who called foul and said that is not what happened there. It was not that lone shooter.
Yeah.
And obviously the CIA popularized then the term conspiracy theorist, you know, to demonize the people that had spotted it. It's not as though people haven't always been aware in small numbers, but it's taken a generation, it's taken a lifetime for most people to now accept that, well, whatever Lee Harvey Oswald was doing that day, you know, he wasn't the assassin of JFK. Then you fast forward to something like 9/11. You know, 9/11 was the false flag that got the world into the war on terror. And again, people were calling that out as and when it was happening, saying, you know, Building 7, hang on, all of it was being called out. But it's only taken a fraction of the time, comparatively speaking, before more and more people are saying whatever we're told happened that day. And 3,000 people did die, and it then launched a war on terror that has claimed millions of lives and enriched beyond the dreams of avarice billionaires and trillionaires. All of those things did happen, but it hasn't taken anything like as long for enough people to say, see that official story about 9/11? That's bogus. And with every succeeding false flag, and when the playbook is so worn out that now people, the moment something happens, the assassination of the murder of Charlie Kirk, people are all over that saying, see that story about Tyler Robinson as a lone shooter and all the rest of it? It's completely bogus. It falls apart like a deck of cards. And tragically, you know, you come into the situation that we are in now in Britain with the murder of Anne Widdecombe. And as that was happening in real time, people were looking at that and saying, well, let's just wait and see what the official narrative is that comes out to explain that sequence of events, because I am telling you, it's going to be bogus. And that's where we are.
Isn't that also the danger that the UN think everything is bogus and may not be?
I don't think it's bogus, because at the heart of it is coming to the realization that the official narratives are always manipulated. Qui bono, we've been taught to ask, you know, who benefits? Yeah. And it's not a hopeless situation to be in. We've all acquired, internalized this, you know, this acceptance of official narratives. And official narratives, I mean, you go all the way back to Edmund Bernays and, you know, the you know, Marshall McLuhan, the you know, the medium is the message and all of the rest of it. And once you begin to see the superstructure of how propaganda is delivered, then you see that, well, if it's the official narrative, let's ask questions.
Yeah.
Each one of us individually and collectively as a community and a civilization, if you wait and hear what the officials say, don't just accept it. Look at it for yourself.
Yes. I'm very much in agreement on that. I'm just, I would say, slightly less sure that everything is a lie, as it were. It may be a manipulation, but it may not be a lie, if you know what I mean.
I haven't called anything a lie. I'm talking about false flags. I mean, events happen. You know, John F. Kennedy, you know, Dallas 63, something happened that day, real event.
Yeah.
9/11. Charlie Kirk, whatever, these things do happen. It's perception of them.
Yes.
And
you know, no, I get that.
I mean, I've gone all the way back. I mean, I don't care about being called a conspiracy theorist. It's literally, well, it's metaphorically water off a duck's back, but I don't care about that. You know, I look, but I grew up particularly when it comes to, say, terrorism and acts of terror. Obviously, I mean, I'm 59. I grew up through the Troubles in Ireland. You know, that was some of the background to my childhood. You know, the nightly news was punctuated by atrocities and intrigue and all of the rest of it about what was happening in Ireland. Now, that was a dreadful set of circumstances, and many, many people had their lives destroyed. People were murdered, and all the rest of it. That really did happen. But I look back in it now and I think, was that official version of events really what happened? Because my goodness, it went away overnight when its use, apparently, when the trouble in Ireland was no longer necessary. Suddenly we got the peace accords and all of the rest of it. And you, who could fail to notice? My wife and I talked at the time about the fact that no sooner did COVID come along than international terrorism completely disappeared. Mm-hmm. And you would have thought, well, you know, with everyone, with the world at a standstill, you could have thought, well, it's almost a free-for-all for the terrorist groups. Mm. You know, ISIS and all of the things that we had been prepped to fear.
Yeah.
They could run rampant now because...
I mean, they were working from home, though, weren't they? Terrorism from home. Doesn't work very
and there was
well,
no, there, but there was none. There was no terrorism, and right. You know, you say why? Well, it was because they didn't need terrorism. Because the same states, and I say that there is no terrorism except state terrorism. The states didn't need the terrorists, lads. Take time out. We'll get back to you. But you know, at the moment, we don't need you because we've got everybody shut in their homes, terrified of something they can't even see. And because look what happened subsequently, Jilani. Jilani, the war on terror, you know, made a demon of Al-Qaeda. We were terrified. Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda's everywhere. You know, it's the new jackal. Here we go. You know, they're everywhere. They've infiltrated everything. They're going to come and kill everyone. Well, you know, fast forward to the destruction of Syria, you know, which was one of the seven wars that NATO embarked upon from the 2000s onwards. Syria was one of the countries that had to be destroyed. Jilani, you know, head chopper in chief for Al Qaeda. There's plenty of pictures of Jilani online holding up severed heads with a smile on his face. And now Jilani in a sharp Savile Row suit with a $20,000 watch on his wrist. They're queuing up the Keir Starmers and the Macrons and the rest of them to have their photographs taken with Jilani, who's Al Qaeda. Because the necessity for Al Qaeda's past its sell by date. Al Qaeda, they're good guys now. When we need them to be the good guys, they're the good guys.
Right. Well, they were the good guys before they were the bad guys as well. So they've actually gone a full circle, haven't they?
Absolutely. You know, the Mujahideen, I mean, they even made a Hollywood movie of it with Rambo 3 or 4.
Yeah,
you know,
three,
where we were invited to see the Mujahideen as the freedom fighters and all of the rest of it, you know, that were actually the put-upon good guys. You know, it's the same as the Fremen in the Dune trilogy. You know, these desert warriors that when it suits, they're portrayed as heroic freedom fighters. Then they become the bad guys, and then, you know, when it's better for the official narrative, you know, to portray them as the good guys again. Oh, get that guy a sharp suit, and we'll call him a hero.
Yeah, amazing. Listen, we could do this all day, couldn't we, really? But we must do it some more, I must say.
We'd probably get just as much balm for our souls talking about old cars, Mike.
Well, we can do it.
Old cars are real. Old cars are real to be trusted.
On this show, you can do old cars and Al-Qaeda and dogs and everything. I mean, we do it all. So great to see you, Neil. Thank you very much indeed. And enjoy the rest of the week, if you can.
Thanks, Michael.
Neil Oliver there talking some very interesting stuff there, right? I mean, you don't get this stuff anywhere else, really, do you?